20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Really appreciate you taking some time and joining me today. We've got a great show. I get it. It's grades for Packers-Ravens, which doesn't sound fun. It wasn't fun going through the grades. It's actually not entirely true, if I'm being honest. The Malik Willis stuff was really fun. I'm really excited to dig into that with you guys. Jordan Morgan had a heck of a game. The defense was really awful. And I get that the game, on the whole, we're trying to forget. And I get that we're a couple days away from a game that we're also probably going to not, want to remember all that much of. But I still think there's a lot of fun takeaways from this game. So I'm excited to go over that with you. We'll get to that in just a moment. Before we get there, just a quick reminder, happy hour coming up 3 p.m. Central Time today. So if you want to talk about something, other than Packers Ravens stuff, we have some other news and notes to go over before we get there as well. But ask your questions away at today's happy hour, again, 3 p.m. Central Time over on YouTube. We do have, as I mentioned, some news and notes from Thursday. The biggest piece of news is that Jordan Love did, in fact, clear concussion protocol. That's huge for a variety of different reasons. On Wednesday, he was able to practice in full because he cleared protocol, which is a great sign. B, you just don't want this thing lingering, right? As I talked about earlier this week, if you get to Wednesday next week and he's still in protocol, now it's just complete panic mode, right? Of like, oh my goodness, is he not going to be able to play in the playoffs? And you're just pushing it. And again, you never know what direction some of these concussions are going to go sometimes. So just great to have that behind Jordan. And now we can focus on getting ready for the wild card game. So that's a really huge piece of news for Green Bay. Meanwhile, Matt LaFleur did state that Clayton Tune is going to be the starting quarterback for this Sunday. No determination yet on a backup quarterback. It is a hamstring right now that Malik Willis is dealing with, obviously as the shoulder as well, but he is definitely limited at the moment. I think they'd probably like to keep him out of this game. You know, they don't want to play Jordan if he's not going to be the starter. They don't want to all of a sudden bring him in off the bench, but we're going to get to a point here where there's only so many players they can call up from the practice squad and they're going to need some other positions. So I'm sure they would love to not have to do Desmond Ridder as the backup quarterback, at least from a call-up standpoint. I think if numbers were not an issue, I think they'd love to go with Tune and Ridder in this game and just not have to worry about Willis or Love at all. But I think they'd probably like to keep that backup spot for somebody else. So if Willis can go, I think there's a chance that Willis still becomes the backup quarterback for this game. And then maybe Jordan's the like emergency third quarterback or things like that. The other thing that they could do is they could go, if Willis isn't ready and they don't have the roster spot to add Clayton Tune, is have Jordan be the backup. If it gets to that point, I can tell you right now, Jordan Love is going to do a heck of a lot of handing off. In fact, it might be all handing off if it were to get to that scenario, just because the only thing you're working on is making sure that Jordan doesn't get injured. The score doesn't matter. The result doesn't matter. None of that matters. So there are some different options there, but they're going to have to kind of work through that to see if Malik could be the backup, if they can bring, have an extra spot to bring up Ridder, or if they somehow, some way need to go with Jordan Love as the backup, then so be it. But again, you probably just hand off in that scenario. The big conversation point has been around Jordan Love and whether or not he should play. I saw a couple of comments in the, some of the YouTube channels and things like that of what is Matt LaFleur doing. This is the biggest no-brainer ever that I have seen for Green Bay. I talk about this in preseason of, do you play some of your starters or do you rest them? And when you get into some situations like this going into the postseason, do you want to play players or do you want to rest them? I think this is a real coin flip more often than not. And I don't think there's a good answer either way. I think there's advantages to playing. I think there's advantages to resting. And more often than not, I'm more than welcome to hear an argument on either side. And the truth is you could be right, I could be right, regardless of what side we're on. There's no perfect scenario in these type of situations. In Green Bay's scenario this year, it is a 1,000,000,000% no-brainer. And the reason I say that is because, A, this team is just nuked with injuries at the moment. I mean, just absolutely nuked. They cannot have many more injuries. You certainly can't have it to core players. You're already so behind the eight ball with guys like Micah and Devontae and Tucker Kraft, and you know the list of players. Like, you're just so beat up already that they cannot afford another injury, right? At least to a core player. The second thing is that this is a team that hasn't had a bye since early in the year. Yes, they've had some mini buys here and there and things like that, but for the most part, they had an early season bye. They could use some rest, and they could use just kind of getting as many players healthy as they can through the course of these next couple of weeks and focusing on Chicago/Philly and getting ready for those two teams. As you know, you're going to face one of them, probably Chicago, in the wild card round. You add on all the things of, you know, Zach Tom not quite being healthy yet. And if you want to play Jordan Love in this game, you probably want to put the pieces around him, right? You don't want to go with Jordan Love with just like, you know, Bo Melton and Matthew Golden at receiver and Josh Wiley at tight end, Emmanuel Wilson at running back, and Donovan Jennings and Anthony Belton and Jacob Monk and Darian Kennard and a backup group of offensive linemen, right? If Jordan plays, you want as many of your best players out there as possible. So A, you can get that rhythm and timing down, and B, so that there's less risk of injury or things going wrong when Jordan's in there. You want your best players out there with him, which means now maybe you're pushing Zach Tom to come back earlier. Now, are you playing Josh Jacobs in this game? I just don't think you want to do those things. So I've seen people, well, they've got to get some momentum. There is nothing that they can accomplish in this game. There is nothing. Meaning if you play Jordan the first series and the starters and they go six plays, 80 yards, immediate touchdown, great. That's, you're going to get to Philly or Chicago. And do you think because you put that first drive against, you know, Brian Flores in Minnesota together, that it's going to help you in any sort of significant way? No, you got to go play that game. You might say, well, Jordan will be fine. I'm not concerned about any rust. That's what practice is for. They'll get him ready. They'll get him set to go. I have no concern about Jordan going out and having to play his best football with having a couple weeks off. He'll be totally, look, go back to the Minnesota game last year when he came off of injury and was clearly still hurt. He put up ridiculous numbers in that game. Yeah, he had an interception later, whatever, that he would like to have back. But outside of that, he was phenomenal in that game. So I have no concerns about Jordan. And guys like Zach Tom, Josh Jacobs, you want to rest Christian Watson and Jaden Reed. You just want to be able to rest as many of those players as you can. And on the flip side, you can have things go catastrophically wrong where if Jordan Love or Josh Jacobs or Zach Tom or Christian Watson or Jaden Reed gets an injury, now you're even more behind the eight ball going into Chicago or Philly. And that's certainly not what you want. And also, you're going against Brian Flores, the Mad Hatter of defensive coordinators. He's going to bring blitzes at you if Jordan Love's in that game. He's not going to go, they have nothing to lose in this game. You're going to play Jordan, all right, we're going to come after you. It wouldn't surprise me if you blitz over and over and over and over again. And we saw it just against Detroit. So I don't think this is the game where you want to be like, oh, let's go out and give it our best shot and all hands on deck. Again, in a normal situation or circumstance, I would say, I think there's a valid debate to be had. There is not a single argument that I can see that for me makes it worthwhile to put any of those type of players, including Jordan, out there in this game. Get him ready for the wild card. That's your advantage. You can rest some players, get them ready to go, start working on the scouting reports and the practice plans for those teams and make it about that. That's what I would do. That's what the Packers are doing. And I would be saying the same thing, by the way. If the Packers were playing their guys this week, I would say I think it's a huge mistake. But I think Matt's 1,000,000% in the right mindset on this one based on the circumstances being the way that they are. So I have no issue with that whatsoever. Meanwhile, Trayvon Diggs could play this weekend. There is some thought about that. Sounds like Jeff Hafley would like him to play. To me, it makes all the sense in the world to play Trayvon Diggs. Now we just, Andy, you want to rest? Well, Diggs just got to the team. You have no idea what you have, and you want to get him out there playing in Hafley's defense to get accustomed and acclimated to it a little bit more. That to me is also a no-brainer. Even if it's 10 plays, 12 plays, 15 plays, obvious passing downs, whatever you want to do, try to get him out there as much as you possibly can. Again, just to get him acclimated in this Jeff Hafley defense. I think that makes all the sense in the world. And once again, you are limited with how many players you have available in this game. Having Diggs would give you an extra corner, and it just makes all the sense in the world to play him in this one. Couple transactions. Mark Perry, as we discussed the other day, safety was added to the practice squad. Meanwhile, McCallan Castles was added to the injury report for the Packers, or the injured list for the Packers practice squad. Yes, even their practice squad players are now going on the injured list. So that's the type of season that it's been for Green Bay. Even McCallum Castles, their like sixth tight end, is now on the injured list on the practice squad. Mark Perry, again, safety, takes his spot. As far as the injury report goes, for the Packers, the three players who did not participate in any way, shape, or form were Donovan Jennings, Savion Williams, and Dontavian Wicks. And this is also not great news. Think about, first of all, wide receiver. We talked about, you probably don't want to play at wide receiver Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, at least, and you'd probably like to keep Romeo Dobbs out as well. Now Wicks might not be able to go because of his concussion, and Savion Williams might not be able to go because of his injury / illness. And if that's the case, you're down to Matthew Golden and Bo Melton, who also might be needed on defense. And then you're probably going to have to call up somebody. But again, you're limited in your amount of call-ups that you can bring up. And in this case, you'd probably need two. So you're really hoping Savion Williams can go in this one. And I think Wicks would be the next guy you would probably like to have go as well. In an ideal world, you would have loved this to be Savion Williams and Matthew Golden playing almost every snap. Even if Williams can go, I'm assuming he's probably going to be on a snap count with that foot injury, that he's not going to give you a full complement of snaps. And if Wicks doesn't clear protocol in time, that's another receiver down. You're almost getting to the point where some of Watson and or Dobbs or Reed are going to have to play in this game. You just pure numbers standpoint. So the Savion Williams and Dontavian Wicks injuries are super disadvantageous. And again, you just love to get Savion Williams the experience in this situation. And meanwhile, on the offensive line, Donovan Jennings probably in line to start this game if he's healthy. Now he's got a throat issue. I would assume that that's something that you can probably play through, but I would have assumed it was something that you could probably practice through. I don't know the whole situation there. Hopefully he's okay. But again, he's in a situation where he probably starts this week if he's healthy. And if he can't go, that's another one where they're inactive because they can't play. And he's one that you're expecting to be active and probably starting for this game. So those are injuries that in most weeks, if Donovan Jennings and Savion Williams were unable to go, Wicks would be noteworthy. But Williams and Jennings, you wouldn't even bat an eye at it. And this week, you really want them active and playing in this game. So worth keeping an eye on there. The Vikings will not go through their full injury report, but noteworthy Aaron Jones and TJ Hockenson did not participate in practice on Thursday. And then JJ McCarthy did practice in full. So there hasn't been an announcement that I've seen between Brosmer and JJ McCarthy at this point. And if McCarthy can go, I would assume they want McCarthy to play in this game. So maybe we get Clayton Toon versus JJ McCarthy, or maybe we get Clayton Toon versus Max Brosmer. We're just going to have to kind of wait and see how that develops through the remaining course of this week, which not much time left before we get to that Sunday matchup with Minnesota, which again means absolutely nothing. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, whether you're starting a new routine or making player picks for the very first time, trying something new can be difficult. But in life and on Prize Picks, it always feels good to be right. And with high pressure playoff matchups every weekend and elite hoops action every night, the action never stops. And Prize Picks lets you take control. Now, I love how simple Prize Picks is to use and how fun it is to play. This football season has been even more fun this year with Prize Picks, and getting in my picks for each slate of game has been a super fun part of each football weekend. And listen, I get we're all having withdrawals from our fantasy leagues being over with, so this is the perfect time to stay in fantasy game mode by using Prize Picks every single week. And if you haven't checked lately, Prize Picks is now available in all 50 states. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And again, make sure that you're using that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. One last piece of news and notes prior to getting to our grades. The Matthew Golden comments from Adam Stenovich. Basically said he's not going to be getting priority snaps come the playoffs, that he's really excited about him in the long term, but there's a list of, you know, developed and veteran wide receivers on the roster ahead of him, and people took umbrage with this. I could understand the argument of like, hey, maybe does it really need to be said? Do you need to go into that detail? But we know this already. He's been behind this group of receivers all season long. And you can make the argument that they're not playing him enough or whatever. I love what I've seen on tape from Golden when he gets out there and gets an opportunity. And I've talked about, to me, Watson is the clear number one. I still think Reed is the clear number two. And then do the next three in any order that you want. Dobbs, Wicks, or Golden, I'm totally fine with it. And then I think after that, after those five, then you get to the, you know, Bo Melton and Savion Williams group of receivers. But I don't really have a major issue based on their experience if Dobbs and Wicks are just ahead of Golden. And Golden's not a great, you know, run blocker either, which I think limits his snaps. There's a lot of things that he and Jayden Reed do similarly, and you're going to get Jayden Reed ahead of him right now based on their experience. So we know it already. Again, is it something that Steno maybe just could have gone without saying? Sure. But I think this is totally, completely much ado about nothing. Also, Steno could be lying, and Golden could be, you know, a key piece of it. And or, again, you're one snap away with somebody getting hurt from all of a sudden having a much bigger, you know, kind of game plan. Even this past week against Baltimore, Golden was the third most snapped receiver, even ahead of Jayden Reed. So it was only Dobbs and Watson that were ahead of him, and it was barely. It was like a couple snaps. So we know how they, you know, kind of rotate these wide receivers. Nothing's going to change. I don't really expect it to. And again, I just think he's kind of stating the obvious, if nothing else. And again, I don't think there's anything that we need to dive too much more into detail with the comments from Steno. I think it was totally fine. No big issue. Again, maybe you could argue you could have just gone without saying it, but I don't think it really affects anything in any way, shape, or form. All right, as far as film review goes, we'll get to the grades, but I don't have a major film review sort of, you know, overarching thought on this one. The one thing I will say from a grade standpoint, though, before we get to the individual grades, I looked at the defensive grades, sort of with Micah and post Micah. Now, to be fair, I'm putting the full Denver game in this, and he played part of that Denver game. But in the 14 weeks prior to the Broncos game, the Packers defense with Micah Parsons had a plus 29.3 grade for the season for me. In the last 3 weeks, 2.5 of which basically were without Micah Parsons, the Packers have a negative 10.0 grade on defense. And the Broncos, Bears, and Ravens games were my three lowest graded performances by the defense so far this year. And you might say, well, Andy, the Chicago game, they allowed 9 points. They allowed a lot of yardage. They thankfully, were able to bend but not break in some of those situations and scenarios. The one time they got off the field was just because of a bad snap by Chicago. They didn't really earn that one. And there was a lot of opportunity there for Chicago that Chicago didn't take advantage of. They still had some very poor play on tape in that game. So again, negative 10 over the last 3 weeks, plus 29.3. That is an insane swing. That's going from having a pretty darn good defense, if not a really good defense, to a atrocious defense. Just with Micah Parsons being gone. He is unbelievable. It's crazy to think what this season would have looked like if they never had Micah in the first place. And it's a disappointing aspect to think about if they still had Micah and what he could be doing to help this defense and making this team still a competitive team going into the playoffs playing at a very high level. Right now, the defense isn't, and they've got to figure out a way to course correct that really quick. And again, this game against Minnesota, not really the week to do that because they're not going to be playing their core players anyway, at least not most of them. Let's get to grades. Packers, Ravens, top three on offense. No surprise, Malik Willis, plus 3.20, the second highest grade on the season for any player. Only one Jordan Love game was higher than this one. Willis was phenomenal. He had the one throw that was a little bit behind Christian Watson, the one throw down the field to Matthew Golden where he was pressured on the play, where he kind of threw it out of bounds. There's nobody open on the play anyway. It was totally fine. And then one play where he took a sack where he could have thrown the ball away and just kind of hitched it a couple extra times and took a bad sack. I think he made up for it on either the next play or the play after anyway. But those are about the three bad plays for the game. And outside of that, he was literally perfect. I mean, that one first down run that he has where he breaks two or three tackles to pick up the first down on third down was insane. Opens the game with the deep ball to Dobbs and then the next one to Watson. You know, he hits Bo Melton down the field for a big play. Just all day, escapes pressure, finds Christian Watson on a deep crosser, all over the place. Whether it was short, intermediate, or long, whether it was him evading pressure and still making the throw, two read options for touchdowns in the run game, scrambling when he needed to. And there were no poor decisions on where to go with the football or to basically, you know, scramble or run with the ball. he made the right decision basically every single time. He knew where to go with the football. He was cognizant of it. And then when it wasn't there, he had the ability to maneuver in the pocket while keeping his eyes downfield. And if it still wasn't there, he took off and ran. And the one bad decision was the one he took the sack on. Even the throw to Watson, where it was a little bit behind, was the right decision. I would argue the throw to Golden is actually kind of the right one because nobody else is open. It's basically either Golden gets it or nobody. I loved everything about his game in this one. A really, really big time performance in extremely limited snaps, by the way, too. They barely had the ball on offense, and he missed the last 7, 8, 9, whatever it was, snaps of this game when Clayton Tune had to come in. Imagine he played a game with like 60 snaps and his 30-ish snaps. He had the second highest grade of the season for anybody on the team. Just a ridiculous performance, an absolutely insane performance. And, you know, for Malik Willis, I'm sure he'd love to play this week, but his agent's probably like, oh, thank God. He's the resume he put together this year and last year in Green Bay already is exactly what you want. And some team absolutely should be knocking on the door ready to make him at least competitive for a starting job, if not just giving it to him. That was an unreal performance. And it was basically the Ravens versus Malik Willis. And Malik Willis, through three quarters, put this team on his back and was only down by 3. And even when they're down 10 and they got the ball back and he makes that great throw to Watson, they're going to go down and score on that drive too. He's putting another scoring drive together, and then Tune comes in, and a couple plays later, it gets picked off the hands of Bo Melton. But I cannot say enough about the performance from Malik Willis. It's as good as it gets. I mean, that is one of the best quarterback performances of this season. He was that good. Really, really impressive. Christian Watson, plus 0.9. We talked about some of them already. Second play from scrimmage outside of the two penalties back-to-back was the seam throw to Watson. Beautiful play there. Play again, the deep crosser. I thought he blocked well throughout the course of the game, ran good routes. He's just been a stud since coming back from injury. And for all the bad injury stuff that's happened to Green Bay this year, him being able to play at peak Christian Watson, prime Christian Watson, the best version of Christian Watson we've seen yet coming off the torn ACL is so freaking impressive. And he continues to just do it week in and week out, regardless of it's, you know, Jordan Love or if it's Malik Willis. Just doesn't seem to matter. He was spectacular again. Huge day for Christian Watson. Number 3, Jordan freaking Morgan, plus 0.85. He was fantastic in this game too. Out of nowhere these last couple weeks. My goodness, A, does he look so much more comfortable at tackle. And I was going to maybe save this conversation for later. Green Bay needs to consider starting him at left tackle when Zach Tom is back. Now, we don't know if Morgan's going to be as effective at left tackle as he has been at right tackle. I would assume he would be. That's where he played in college. That's what's sort of his expected best position is. But if he can play as well at left tackle as he has been at right tackle lately, when I say it's a no-brainer, it's a no-brainer. Now, small sample size for Jordan Morgan at right tackle. Very small sample size. But you know what isn't a small sample size? Rashid Walker this year at left tackle. And he is now my lowest graded player on the team this year. So if it's me, I'm sitting down and having a long conversation, or maybe it doesn't even need to be that long. And I think you have to consider starting Jordan Morgan. Now, Green Bay has a bad history of making offensive line moves in a playoff game kind of out of nowhere. So maybe you want to avoid that. But right now, in the last few weeks since Morgan started playing tackle, there is no doubt in my mind that Morgan has been much better at right tackle than what Rashid Walker has been at left tackle. And Morgan's supposed to be his best at left tackle. I think it's a conversation that needs to take place. But I love Morgan in this game. Sometimes it just comes down to pure confidence. Morgan never looked comfortable or confident at guard. Never, ever. And in preseason at left tackle, he looked great. And now he gets a chance at right tackle and he looks really good. I just think he's a tackle and I wouldn't mess with it anymore. And the unfortunate thing for the Packers, and I'll just call it out, one of the things you have to know best is your own roster. And it's really important that you have an understanding of what your best players are and how they fit best on your team. There's a world in which they got so many of these decisions on the offensive line wrong. They started with Morgan at guard and Belton at tackle. And I think both of those were wrong. I think Belton should have been at guard right away and Morgan should have been at tackle. I think that would have solved some early season issues as well. And both of them would have been in better situations to start the year. I think Sean Ryan should have been the starting center from day one. Now, he didn't have a great game in this one, primarily due to the bad snap, but he should have been at center. I think you can actually make an argument that with the benefit of hindsight, and I know that coaches don't get the benefit of that, that your best starting five would have been Jordan Morgan at left tackle. Now, we haven't seen it, so I can't say for sure, but I think it's a possibility. Jordan Morgan at left tackle, Elgton Jenkins at left guard, Sean Ryan at center, Anthony Belton at right guard, and Zach Tom at right tackle. I think there's a real chance that that would have been their best lineup going into the year. And we never saw Morgan at left tackle yet. We never got Elgton Jenkins at left guard this year. Sean Ryan just started playing center. Anthony Belton just started playing right guard. And then, of course, Zach Tom at right tackle. I think in hindsight, that might have been their best lineup with Rashid Walker and Aaron Banks. Now, they were never going to be able to put Aaron Banks on the bench with the contract that they gave him. But Rashid Walker and Aaron Banks being your first two off the bench, I think is might have been what would have been your best lineup. Kennard would have been the third after that. But never saw it that way. And again, I think the mistake was putting Morgan at guard and Belton at tackle. And I think they got that wrong. And I would have a really, really long look at whether or not they should go with Rashid on the bench and go with Jordan Morgan at left tackle once week 18. And this is a great week, by the way, to get Jordan Morgan a look at left tackle and see what he can do. And then put Kennard at right tackle, where I think he's a little bit better too. And see what Morgan looks like at left tackle. Now, if you're concerned that Zach Tom's not going to be back for the wild card round, then I think you want to keep Jordan at right tackle and get him ready for that game and keep him in one spot and not confuse things. But if you think Tom's going to be back at right tackle anyway for the wild card round, I'm getting a really good look at Jordan Morgan at left tackle in this game against Minnesota. See how he performs. And if he looks good, I'm making the switch. I'm going Morgan left tackle and I'm benching Rashid Walker. I just don't think it's been anywhere near close to good enough for Rashid Walker this year. Bottom three in offense, Clayton Toon, negative 0.7. The interception is not really on him. That gets to Melton and it bounces off of Melton's hands. But Melton, the ball to Melton was wobbly for sure. And I didn't think it was a clean ball. And then he misses two throws to the outside, two bad reads to the outside, where I thought Musgrave on the corner would have been the better read, especially on the second one where they had to get it was a fourth down and he threw short of the sticks and he completely missed Matthew Golden. It was not a pretty sight for Clayton Toon in a very small sample size, a negative 0.7 grade. And that's not even, again, knocking the interception really against him other than a small negative for, I think, throwing a little bit more of a wobbly ball to Melton on that play. But it just didn't look pretty. That's a tough ask. I know you're going in late in the game, down by 10, you have to throw, et cetera, but it was not super promising. We'll see if, you know, he can do a little bit better in the game against Minnesota this upcoming Sunday. Aaron Banks, negative 0.65. Just some head scratching plays again for Aaron Banks, where you just feel like he should be settling into the season more. And he just hasn't. It's been really disappointing. After the injury initially, there was a stretch of games where he was playing some pretty good football and he felt like he settled in and we were starting to get a little bit more proof of concept of Banks. And then these last few weeks, two of the three have just been really bad, really, really bad. And it just is, you know, some immediate losses, especially in the pass game. He got basically just pushed over. He didn't trip or anything. He just got pushed over on his back immediately off the ball. Just some rough play from Banks. They did call the false start on him early in the game. I didn't have a negative on that one because, first of all, Belton moved before Banks did. And then the second thing is, I think there's a chance Sean Ryan actually didn't snap it on time because Willis goes for it and then he looks like he's expecting it. And right as he's expecting it, Belton and Banks and a couple others start to go in motion and run the play. And then the snap is late. So I actually think that might have been on Ryan, but I didn't know for sure. So I didn't give a negative on that play, but I did not hold that false start against him. Even if it was a false start and even if it wasn't on Ryan, it was Belton who actually moved first and not Aaron Banks on that one. And then Sean Ryan, negative 0.6, would have been a pretty solid positive grade for Sean Ryan again, had it not been for the brutal early snap that went right off of Malik Willis's face and was a huge turnover in that game. That just can't happen And especially at home, if it's on the road and crowd noise is causing issues, sure. But as Matt LaFleur noted, you know, Malik wasn't even in his cadence yet. And all of a sudden he snaps it back and it goes against Malik Willis's helmet and they lose the play. That's just one where Sean Ryan's got to be 100% sure before he snaps that. And he just has to understand the situation. And to not even be in the cadence and snap the ball is a rough look. That's a pretty big negative on that play for Sean Ryan and a really disappointing play in the game. We'll be right back. Some noteworthy players on offense. Josh Jacobs, negative 0.35. He got blown up in a pass pro rep. And then there was one other play where I thought he had the ability to get to the outside and he cut it in. And I just thought you could argue maybe it was the right read, but I just think with a little bit better vision, he cuts that outside and gets a much bigger play out of it. So a couple negatives there for Josh Jacobs. Just doesn't quite look like himself. Not a lot of opportunity in this game either for Josh to kind of make up for it like it normally would happen. Romeo Doubs plus 0.45. Nice week for him coming off a really rough special teams play in Chicago to open the game with the deep ball down the field was good. And you know, had I think at least one other nice reception, but a good day from Romeo overall. Jaden Reed plus 0.3 didn't do a ton in this game, but I thought he looked good running routes, came up with a couple catches here and there. Overall, a solid day for Jaden. Bo Melton, negative 0.1, had the really nice play down the field on the 30 whatever yard reception, but also had the ball go off his hands, which led to an interception. Josh Wiley, I thought, put some good film out there, both as a blocker and as a receiver, plus 0.2 grade for him. And then we talked about Sheed, negative 0.55 grade. I thought he struggled all day long. And again, just now my lowest graded player on the team so far is Rashid Walker after that negative 0.55 performance. Jump over to the defensive side of the ball. A lot of talk about LVN this week. I thought he was pretty good. I didn't think he was great. I didn't think it was the best performance of LVN's career, but I thought he had a good performance. He was still my highest graded defender, but there were not many high graded defenders in this one. Plus 0.35 for LVN. Good. I thought he was much better in the second half. First half, he had a negative grade for me. Second half, he was a lot better, and some really fun signs and just, you know, physical at the point of attack, getting off of blocks, making plays, just making things difficult in the run game and the pass game. That's some signs there from LVN, which you love to see. Edgerrin Cooper is number two, plus 0.3. The defensive line was just a mess in front of him, which made it really hard for him and Quay. But he continued to rally to the football, make some tackles, and do his best to still make an impact despite all the chaos that was going on around him. And then Kamal Haddon, just one nice play coming up in the run game, plus 0.15, where he got around a defender and made a play. I think it was at the line of scrimmage. Maybe it was a one-yard gain or a one-yard loss, but right at the line of scrimmage. So good play basically there from Kamal Haddon. That's the type of day it was when Kamal Haddon is your third highest graded player because of one play that he made in the backfield and he barely played outside of that before going out with a big injury. That just tells you what type of day it was defensively. Bottom three on defense, it will not surprise you at all to know Carrington Valentine, negative 1.55, a brutal grade for Carrington. Just sucked in coverage, sucked in run defense. Just a all-around bad day for Carrington. Got force pushed by Derrick Henry about 5 yards down the field. Another play where he just avoided contact and didn't get involved in the play in run defense. Third down touchdown allowed. I think it was to Flowers. I'd have to go back and look for sure what the receiver was for Baltimore, but third down touchdown where you're bringing extra heavy pressure. So, you know, it's basically going to be one move for the wide receiver and he's just late to it. Just a really ugly performance of all the way around from Carrington Valentine. There's a reason they were trying to bench him. It was rough. It was very, very rough. Warren Brinson, negative 0.6. Just didn't have many good plays to kind of make up for the bad. Struggled to get off of blocks, got moved in the run game, didn't get anything going as a pass rusher. Just one of those rough days for a rookie defensive tackle. They could really use him stepping up. That's a lot to ask for a rookie sixth-round pick, but this was not his best performance on the year for Warren Brinson. Then Keyshawn Nixon, negative 0.55. I also thought there were a couple plays in coverage where he could have been better. Did have the nice pass breakup on DeAndre Hopkins in the end zone, but didn't tackle well either. Didn't have the run stopping game that you would normally expect from him. Just a tough game. PFF liked him more, so maybe you liked him more than I did. But I didn't think this was a great game for Keyshawn Nixon either. Noteworthy ones on defense, Quentin Bohanna, negative 0.4. There's a reason he was cut this week. He just got blown off the ball all but one time, basically, when he was in there on defense. Carl Brooks would have had a closer to a neutral or positive grade had it not been for the late offsides penalty on the key fourth down late in the game. and he jumped off sides and gave him a first down. Had it not been for that, he would have probably been a slight positive in this one. But that's a big time, you know, mental mistake and error in jumping off sides on that play. Rashawn Gary, negative 0.3. PFF actually had a positive grade on Gary. People are going to hate this, but I don't think Gary is as bad again in this game as people want to make it out to be. Nowhere near living up to expectations, no sacks or whatever. I'm not defending Rashawn. This isn't good enough. It's not good enough football any way that you slice it for what you're expecting from him. But I'll once again say, if you're just thinking, cut him now, like he's not helping this team or anything like that, I'm not quite there to that extent. I think he might still actually be the best defensive end for Green Bay. You might say Enigbari, negative 0.4. I had a worse grade on Enigbari this week than I did on Rashawn Gary. LVN obviously had a much better grade this week, but you're going to need those guys. And while I have no ill-conceived notion that Rashawn Gary is just all of a sudden going to start playing great football the rest of this year, I think you got to try to find a way to get more out of him, because I still think he has the ability to make an impact that hasn't happened recently. I'm not expecting much, but I think a little bit more than maybe what he's given these last handful of weeks. Kingsley Enigbari, as mentioned, negative 0.4. Had a couple of nice plays, one big play in the backfield, but struggled the rest of the game. And then Isaiah McDuffie, one of his lowest graded performances, negative 0.35. He struggled to get off blocks, got blown off the screen on one particular block. I can't remember if it was a tight end or a tackle, but either way, I thought he could have held up at the point of attack a little bit better than he did in this game. And then Quay Walker, negative 0.45. I just thought he was a little bit late to diagnose and a little bit late to the ball. Didn't think he showed off his great quickness and instincts. There was a couple plays, one in particular where he kind of dodged a couple people and made a play right around the line of scrimmage, but also just struggled with the physicality of this game. Ravens, because the defensive line sucked in front of him, offensive linemen were getting to the second level, making things really complicated for Quay and Coop. And I thought Coop did a little bit better job of navigating that than what Quay did, which is why a little bit more of a negative grade for Quay. But not his best performance, but a lot of it went to the chaos that was going on the defensive line in front of him. Just to kind of recap it, top three in offense, Malik Willis, Christian Watson, and Jordan Morgan. Bottom three in offense, Clayton Tune, Aaron Banks, and Sean Ryan. Top three in defense, LVN, Edrin Cooper, and Kamal Haddon. Bottom three in defense, Carrington Valentine, Warren Brinson, and Keyshawn Nixon. Appreciate you guys for joining me today. Again, happy hour coming up at 3 p.m. Central Time. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Ataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle, Sinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhart, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, Jay Koner, and Donald Decker. See you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.